Welcome to episode 49 of Power of the Purse podcast. My guest today is Patricia Barry, who is truly an expert on Medicare. Have her explain to us why there is no shame in not understanding Medicare. She gives us three really good reasons why it's so difficult. And what are the traps of Medicare most people don't know about? Who tells you when it's time to sign up for Medicare? What's the difference between Medicare versus Medicare Advantage? Why won't Medicare run out of money? What role does politics play in adjusting Medicare? Can you really get impartial advice on what plan is best for you? Are you stuck with the plan that you pick? How helpful is the Medicare.gov website? How drastic are the differences in drug costs among all the Part D providers in your state? And what is the importance of the annual notice of change? I hope you'll feel a whole lot smarter about Medicare after you've listened to this episode of the podcast.
Welcome to the Power of the Purse podcast, the only show connecting women professionals to their peers. This isn't just about money, this is about life. And now the host of the Power of the Purse podcast, Lynn S. Evans.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Lynn S. Evans, and I am the host of Power of the Purse podcast. There was a time in my life, not too long ago, when I believed three things about money. One, women are not supposed to talk about or be included in any conversations about money. Two, women don't have the natural ability to understand anything about money. And three, men know best how to manage money. And those truths I made up about money guided me for years, until I realized money was not a foreign language or some other obscure academic exercise, and it was something I could not only understand, but teach to other women. Too many times I've heard stories from women who ought to know better but didn't, until they were forced to, because of divorce, widowhood, job loss, or the approach of retirement. This podcast will add another chapter to an ongoing, informative conversation about financial topics women should be more knowledgeable about. My mission is to help women have a healthy, positive relationship with money. With that in mind, my guest today is Patricia Barry. She is a journalist who is a sought-after expert on Medicare. She is the author of Medicare for Dummies, the third edition of which will be published in early October. Her formal education started with a degree in history, and she was trained as a journalist for 3 years in Sheffield, England. She's done many different columns and writings throughout much of England in smaller regional newspapers, and ended up working as an investigative reporter for the Sunday Times in London on topics relative to the laws affecting women. She then came to this country with her husband and children and was working with AARP for 18 years writing about Medicare. She continues now as a resource for people who have questions about Medicare, and she's answered over 14,000 of them. Welcome, Patricia.
Thank you, Lynn. It's good of you to ask me.
So let's just jump right in. Let's talk about all the things that we want to know about Medicare. This is such an incredibly big topic. I hope we can get all this in, but I think what we want to do is talk about some of the highlights, some of the most common themes you've noticed in the questions that people have asked. Let's start with the first most obvious one. Why is it so hard to understand Medicare?
Well, people who find it confusing shouldn't be ashamed or anything. Everybody's baffled by Medicare. I call it equal opportunity confusion. It affects people who've got triple degrees and people who tell me that their law degree they thought was the hardest thing they ever did until they came to sign up for Medicare. And so, you know, why is it so confusing? Well, there are three real reasons. One of them is that Medicare has different rules for different people in different circumstances. So, you know, if you're following somebody else, you might be getting it wrong. The second reason is that Medicare has a lot of choices. It offers a lot of choices, and you have to make decisions between those choices. And thirdly, there's an enormous amount of misinformation about Medicare. People tend to turn to their friends, their families, their doctors, their HR departments, and they get an enormous lot of information that's wrong from those people. And I regret to say that sometimes even Social Security officials and Medicare officials who are supposed to help people enroll and answer their questions sometimes also give them misleading information. So that's why Medicare is confusing, and so I'm here to try and help point out what you should do in certain circumstances.
Well, thankfully, you've written that third edition of the book, Medicare for Dummies, because I think most of us would consider ourselves dummies in that regard. I know when I went through the process last year, I felt the same way. I was just overwhelmed by the amount of information and what seemed to be the complexity of the choices that we have. So that's another question I think people have pondered. And why are there so many choices? Why do we go from A down to, what is it, N or something like that with the number of different choices?
A, B, C, and D, basically.
Okay. Why do we need to have all that?
Well, Medicare started in 1966, having been passed into law in 1965. And it was quite a simple program in those days. You had what we now call traditional Medicare, and usually people were 65. They signed up for it. They signed up for Social Security at the same time, and it was all fairly straightforward. But since then, and not only has a lot of different coverages been added to Medicare, but also they've brought in new ways of receiving Medicare benefits, and that's called a program called Medicare Advantage. It has gone by various names over the years, but now it's Medicare Advantage. And these are mainly HMO plans, PPO plans, the kind people are probably familiar with if they've had insurance through their employers. And also Part D prescription drug coverage. This didn't come in. There was no prescription drug coverage with Medicare until 2006, 40 years after Medicare had started. And that's a very complicated program, too. It's private plans that you have to choose between. And in most states, there are at least 20 or 22 plans to choose between. They all have different costs and benefits. So I will later on, I think, Lynn, if that's right with you, come back to how you choose among those options. But
sure.
I'd like first to talk about enrolling in Medicare, because this is what confuses people probably more than anything.
Mm-hmm.
The fact is that there are traps, that if you don't get it right, you can be penalized financially for the rest of the time in Medicare, that is, the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. And the question that people ask me more than anything, and probably is of most of interest to your listeners, is, I'm working, I'm continuing to work after 65, should I sign up for Medicare? If I don't, will I be penalized? And so this is a very important question. If you have got employer insurance, and either you're from your own employer, active employer, or your spouse's active employer, then you can delay Medicare enrollment until you retire or until when you want to sign up. And you get a special enrollment period to do that so that you don't get any financial penalties. If you haven't got that kind of insurance, and you're on the basis that you're actively working for the employer who gives it to you, then you need to sign up when you're 65 in your initial enrollment period, and that runs for 7 months, of which the fourth month is usually the one in which you turn 65. So these are very specific times when you can sign up. And the consequences of not enrolling at the right time for you, either during your initial enrollment period or during a special enrollment period, are quite steep. You can get late penalties, which are added to your premiums for all future years. But also, You can sign up only during a general enrollment period, which runs from January the 1st to March 31st every year, and your coverage will not begin until July 1st. So, wow. You know, there are big consequences in not getting it right. And quite a lot of people fall into a trap where they're working, you know, they're perhaps they're 68, 70 or something, they decide to retire, and their employer offers them COBRA, which is the extension of their employer insurance coverage. And very often, the employer does not tell them that this doesn't count as far as Medicare is concerned as, you know, proper insurance coverage. So if you're offered COBRA for 11 months and you take it, and by that time your special enrollment period has run out, but you go along to sign up and they say, oh, sorry, you can't. You have to sign up in a general enrollment period because COBRA doesn't count, and nor do retiree benefits. So, you know, if you have retiree benefits as well, either you sign up within your initial enrollment period when you're 65, or when you have this special enrollment period when you retire, or when your spouse retires. And you really must sign up then, because if you don't, then when you eventually want to, then you will get face these consequences that I've just talked about. It's a really important decision to make at the time of which you're 65, or at the time of which you retire, or your spouse retires from a job that gives you insurance coverage.
Can we go back to that thing you mentioned about the initial enrollment period, which starts 3 months before your 65th birthday?
Yes, I'll explain more on that if you like.
I would.
Yeah, it's a 7 month period. And it's the first 3 months, if you sign up during that time, then your coverage starts on the first day of the fourth month, which is usually the one in which you turn 65. Mm-hmm. If you sign up later than that, you still get a delay in coverage a bit. It could be anything from 1 to 3 months, depending on when you sign up. You need to let me go back one second too, because there is a different kind of enrollment, and that's automatic enrollment, and that happens if you're already receiving Social Security benefits at the time you apply for Medicare. Then you will automatically be enrolled by Social Security. But if you're not receiving those benefits, either retirement benefits or disability benefits, then you would need to actively apply. And the enrollment periods I'm talking about are the ones in which you would actively have to apply. And most people these days, I think, you can start taking Social Security at 62, but you don't get as many benefits as you would if you enrolled later. And you can enroll right up to 70, in age 70, and every year you get much more money in your retirement benefits the longer you leave it, but only until 70, and after that it stabilizes.
Okay, so let's use an example. Let me say
Let me have an example. Say your birthday is 65th birthday is in June, so mm-hmm. your initial enrollment period would begin March 1st, and it would go right through to September the 30th. If you're going to sign up during this period, then it's best to do so in those first 3 months, because then your coverage starts immediately. There is a one exception here, and there's always exceptions in Medicare, mm-hmm. And that is if your 65th birthday happens to fall on the first day of the month, and in that case, the whole initial enrollment period sort of comes forward a month. And so that example I gave before, I mean, if you turn 65 on June 1st, then your enrollment period would begin February 1st and go through to August 31st.
Okay,
so
you get a bonus
that's a little
month.
Bit of a, you know, a twist on that.
Yeah.
But otherwise, the enrollment period is fairly straightforward, and you would call Social Security or go online to socialsecurity.gov where you can, if you're signing up to 65, you can usually sign up for Medicare online. Otherwise, you call Social Security, which is 1-800-772-1213, and then you can enroll either on the phone or at a local Social Security office. And in certain circumstances, you should do it at your Social Security office. If you're foreign-born, for example, if you need to produce green cards or foreign births and marriage certificates, which you can't really replace very easily, then you should take them down to the Social Security office. Also, if you're signing up in a special enrollment period when you've delayed because you've been working or your spouse has been working, then you need to get a form signed by your employer and previous employers saying that you have received insurance, health insurance from active work, current employment, since you turned 65. So these are the sort of basic things you have to go through. But the important thing is to enroll at the right time for you.
And who tells us that it's time to do that?
May I say that anyone who's in a same-sex marriage these days, they have the same rights totally as enrollment as people who are in opposite sex marriages. It's important for people, I think, to know that. However, if you're in a domestic partnership, then that's a little bit more complicated.
Mm. And who tells us when it's time to enroll? I mean, most people know that when they turn 65, they have to apply for Medicare. But they may be under the false impression that since they are working full-time and covered under an employee's benefit package, they don't need to do this. They don't need to do any enrollment. So,
well,
I think
they don't need to sign up at 65 if they're having this insurance from an employer, their own or their spouse's, if they don't want to. You said something then. I'm just thinking what it was.
The thing is, who tells you that this is something
that's really important. Nobody tells you.
Yeah. Exactly.
Nobody tells you, unless you're already receiving Social Security benefits, and then you get a letter from Social Security with your Medicare card about three months before your 65th birthday. Nobody tells you. In fact, the Medicare Rights Center and various other consumer organizations have been trying for a long time to bring in laws that would require a government agency, either Medicare or Social Security, to inform everybody when they become 65 of their rights and information on when they should enroll or when they should delay enrollment. That was a legislation that was introduced in the last Congress last year, but of course it died with the end of that Congress. It wasn't passed, and it still hasn't been passed. So I'm afraid that until that act is passed, if it ever is, then we're on our own, and we have to know about these things without being told.
Yeah. And then I think about recently, it was something in my world as a financial advisor where the penalties were extremely high if you didn't take a required minimum distribution from your qualified plans, like your IRAs and 401ks. And if you didn't take it, the penalty was 50% of the amount you should have taken.
Yeah.
Very steep penalty. But then what happened was all of the institutions that have custody of these funds were then required to let people know that they had a certain date and time by which they had to withdraw the funds or these are the penalties. I just think it's ridiculous that if the government, the federal government, is the one that issues our Social Security numbers, they know when we were born, why can they not let us know? Everybody should know that at certain dates and times you need to either enroll in Medicare or let somebody know that you have an option to continue with your employer's benefits.
Yeah, I agree with you, but we're not there yet, I'm afraid.
Wow.
And therefore, people do fall into extraordinary traps.
Wow, that's just amazing.
The rest of their lives sometimes. It's really not fair, but I'm afraid that's the way the system works.
Well, the federal government never said it was going to be fair. We know that.
But it means that also, I mean, I have some sympathy with, particularly with Social Security officials who don't get the funding to give sufficient information to everybody, even when people call. The fact is that people are turning 65 at the rate of 10,000 a day at the moment.
Yeah.
But Social Security has been sort of hasn't had its funds bumped up in consequence. So when I hear that, as I frequently do, that somebody has been given wrong information by a Social Security official, I think it's a great pity. But the fact is that there's an enormous amount that they have to know, and even to be trained in everything. I've been working on this for 18 years, and I still find things that I don't know. So I do have some sympathy with them.
Let's go back. It does mean
that consumers have to be on the mark about this, and that's what I try to do all the time, to tell them what they should be doing.
Thankfully, you're there, so people can call you and ask these questions, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But I want to go back to something that you said earlier, Patricia. You talked about traditional Medicare versus Medicare Advantage plans.
Yeah.
Can you tell us what is the difference between the two?
Well, the main difference is that in the traditional program, which is also called Original Medicare, it's a fee-for-service system. And what that means is that the government pays for a contribution towards every Medicare covered service that you receive. And you can go to any doctor, any provider, any hospital that accepts Medicare patients anywhere in the United States. You don't have to go through any kind of gatekeepers or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
In Medicare Advantage, it's different. These are, in the HMO system, the health maintenance organizations, which I think a lot of us are familiar with, usually you have to stay within the provider network and the geographical limitations, the service area of the plan you're enrolled in. With PPOs, that's preferred provider organizations, they also have limited geographical service areas and network providers, but if you want to go outside, then you can, but you pay a higher copay. So that's broadly the main differences between them. The traditional Medicare consists of Part A and Part B. Part A is mainly coverage for hospital stays, home health services, hospice care. Part B covers all doctor services, including those in the hospital, outpatient care, and medical equipment. Whether you're enrolled in Medicare, traditional Medicare, or Medicare Advantage, you get those benefits. You get Part A and Part B benefits. If you need to add prescription drug coverage, then if you're in the traditional program, then you have to join what's called a standalone drug plan under Part D that just provides drug coverage, and you'd pay an extra premium for that. In Medicare Advantage, most Medicare Advantage plans include Part D coverage in their basic benefits package for no extra cost. Some Medicare Advantage plans charge their own premiums in addition to the Part B premium that people pay. And in some areas where there's large competition, sometimes they don't charge their own. These are the main things. The fact is that in some cases, Medicare Advantage plans can offer lower costs, lower copays. Not always, but they were supposed to. And also they have the option of providing more services than Medicare covers. So, for example, the sort of big glaring, I suppose, gaps in Medicare traditional Medicare coverage is coverage for routine vision care, dental care, and hearing care. You know, if you have something real problem medically with your eyes or your ears or what have you, or your jaw, yes, you get coverage then. But for routine things like, you know, hearing aids, checkups, dentures, this kind of thing, then you don't get coverage in traditional Medicare. There are some Medicare Advantage plans that do give coverage for those things to a degree.
Okay.
So you may get sort of, you know, a few more benefits in Medicare Advantage than you do in the traditional program.
So did you say, I want to be clear on this, did you say that the Medicare Advantage plans are usually private plans,
insurance
companies?
Okay. They're all run by private insurance companies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all the big names you can think of and some more.
But Medicare is run by the federal government.
Yes, it is, but, you know, I mean, it certainly is, but the fact is that every provider you go to is private. You know, they're all private doctors, they're all private hospitals in this country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is a government-run program, but also the government, you know, overlooks Medicare Advantage plans. They have to conform to certain rules.
Okay.
So they're not sort of completely off on their own. But yes, they are private.
And let's talk about Part D for a minute, the drug coverage.
Yeah.
That is not a requirement, correct?
Well, I should have said that nothing in Medicare is a requirement. Nobody forces you to sign up for anything.
But if you don't, you have penalties.
Yeah, that's the quid pro quo. I mean, the reasons, there are good reasons for these things, even if they sound terribly unfair. The reason there are penalties and delayed coverage is because Medicare wants you to sign up as soon as you're able to. Medicare covers, you know, it employs standard insurance principles. And that is that you need, in health anyway, you need younger and healthier people in the system so that it can function.
Mm-hmm.
If everybody was allowed to sign up when they wanted medical care, the system couldn't function. Or if it did, it would be so expensive that hardly anybody could afford it.
Yes.
So that's the point. I mean, the mass coverage is the point. And people who are younger and healthier in that, still contributing premiums, even if they don't have any health care. It's the same way as auto insurance or homeowners insurance. You know, we buy
our life insurance
because we, you know, if we total our car or if mm-hmm. our house burns down or something, we're covered against those possibilities. It's the same with Medicare. If you can't just go along when you need it. And although, you know, people very often realize that Part D in particular, the drug benefit, you know, you don't have to join it. It's optional. And there are penalties later on. But I get a lot of mail from people who say, you know, I'm on Medicare, but I don't take any drugs. Why on earth would I pay a premium every month to get that coverage?
Right.
And this is what I tell them. Well, you do it for homeowners or renters, you know, insurance or auto insurance. And it's the same thing, and it's for the same reasons.
Because if you need it, then you have it. Is that the premise?
Yeah. But, you know, people don't quite often. And I've had, you know, rather heartbreaking cases from people who've written to say they didn't join Part D because they were fine, they were healthy. And then they were struck by some horrible disease like cancer
mm-hmm.
out of the blue. Needed really expensive drugs and couldn't afford it because this had happened to them in, say, March, and they weren't able to sign up until open enrollment at the end of the year with coverage starting in January.
Yeah.
You know, they say, what can I do? And I said, you can't do anything, I'm afraid. This is very important when people, you know, write, and indeed in the book, when people, you know, say, why should I need this coverage? Well, that's the reason you need it, because you never know, you haven't got a crystal ball. You don't know what's coming down the pike in terms of your health, or not just even your genetic diseases that you wouldn't suspect, or an injury that you have that you didn't foresee. Of course, none of us foresees these things, but that's why you have insurance, and Medicare isn't any different. I should go back to say one thing about the original program, the traditional program, and that is that, as I've said already, if you're in this program, then you would need to add prescription drug coverage under Part D by joining a Part D plan. Also, you might have. You have the option there to join what's called a Medigap, to buy Medigap insurance. This is supplemental insurance. And in traditional Medicare, under Part D, that's doctor services and outpatient care and medical equipment, your copay is 20% of the cost, which can be quite high. Mm-hmm. You can avoid that by buying extra insurance, another premium, which is called Medigap insurance, and there are 10 different Medigap plans, each with a different set of benefits. And again, these are supplied by private insurance companies, and you can choose, which one you like, and then you're covered. So if you have reasonable Medigap insurance as well as Medicare, then you're basically not paying anything hardly for your coverage, depending on which Medigap policy you buy, of course. But on the whole, you can avoid those costs. Now, in Medicare Advantage, you can't have Medigap as well. You will have out-of-pocket costs, but they can't be covered by insurance. So the copays may be lower in Medicare Advantage plans, but you still have copays.
Do you think that Medicare is ever going to run out of funds?
No, it doesn't have to. The every year it's the trustees. The trustees report comes out for Medicare, and every year, it says that it's going to run out of funds. Instead of 10 years or 5 years or 20 years, it varies tremendously every year because the projections are always different. It hasn't so far, although it's been projected to have run out by now. And let me just say that running out is a sort of misnomer. When they say that, Medicare Part A, that is, which is hospital care, can fulfill its obligations until, let's say, I don't know what it is at the moment, I can't remember, but let's say it's 2030. Then what that means is that in the year 2030, it will not be able to completely cover the benefits that it does now. But that doesn't mean that people are not going to get any coverage at all.
So there may be some part of it that would be covered.
And actually, the government always has the possibility to change that so that people could, if people... At the moment, you pay payroll taxes pay for Part A benefits basically. They pay for premiums rather, not for benefits. And so if you've paid in at least 40 work credits, and that's about 10 years of work, then you will be able to get Part A benefits, hospital benefits, without paying premiums for them. Part B, you don't need work credits, you pay premiums. Part D, you don't need work credits, you pay premiums. But the way that it's structured is that the government can't run out of Part B funds because basically, unless they totally change the structure at the moment, all the premiums we pay for Part B, which is currently for most people $134 a month, and more if your income is higher, then then they can simply, well that our premiums are account for 25% of the cost of the program, and the federal government pays the other 75% as a subsidy for us. They could, so that Part B can't run out because they can, they just put up the premiums to cover the expected shortfall. And with Part A, they could always increase the payroll tax if they wanted to. I mean, you know, these are political issues now, of course.
Yes.
And, you know, who knows what's going to happen. And then there's all sorts of proposals from Speaker of the House and other people who want to basically make Medicare into a totally private system for people who are, well, if they do that, then it wouldn't affect people who are 55 and older at the time the law changes. It would affect people overall in the end, because although those people can stay in traditional Medicare, then the and then their premiums were likely to go up because as fewer and fewer people were in the system. So, you know, this is all a political trade-off. But I think that, you know, that's something that's sort of out of our hands. What I try to do is to help people understand Medicare as it is now under current mm-hmm. law. And as the laws change, of course, I change what I write.
Patricia, if someone was approaching age 65 and knew that they were in that initial enrollment period or it's coming up, where would you suggest that they go to try to get some impartial advice on what types of plans they should consider?
Yeah, well, there's a wonderful system actually called the State Health Insurance Assistance Programs. They're called SHIPs for short. Mm-hmm. And these are staffed mainly by volunteers who have been trained in Medicare and Medicaid questions. And if you go to them, you can talk to a counselor personally, and they can give you personal help to guide you through the process of reviewing your options in Medicare. If you decide you want to have, you know, a Part D plan, they can work out which is the best kind of plan that meets your needs and your preferences, and the same with Medicare Advantage plans, and they are extremely good. The problem always is that when you turn 65, even afterwards, you are inundated with mailings from all these private companies,
yeah.
insurance companies that offer Medicare
yeah.
Advantage programs, plans, and Part D plans, and you have no way of knowing which of those plans is best for you.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just take Part D, the drug plan. So you want a standalone drug plan. And people choose those plans for all sorts of bad reasons. They do it because they join a particular plan because their spouse is in that plan, or their best mm-hmm. friend is in that plan, or they join a plan because they know the name of the insurance company, or their doctor has suggested it. The thing is that when you're wanting to have a Part D plan, which it just gives prescription drugs, the only good way of finding the best plan for you is to do it according to the drugs that you currently take. And the Medicare website, medicare.gov, has a plan finder program on it, and you can go in and you can plug in your zip code, first of all, and the specific names of the drugs you take, plus their dosages, how often you take them, and the program will do the math for you and work out which plan or plans in your area will give you the best deal, i.e. will cover your drugs at the least out-of-pocket cost. And when I say least out-of-pocket cost, I'm including their premiums and co-pays and the coverage gap and all of that that's in the Part D structure. And this can be, you know, arduous for some people. They're the ones who should go to the ships, because the ships can also do that. They can look up. They're very experienced with looking at these plans and finding out which is best for you. And I'll give you a reason for doing that, because it seems arduous. My God, you know, do we have to do this every year? Well, ideally, yes.
Yeah.
But the reason is, every year for the last several years, I have done an analysis of plans, a Part D plans for the following year. So this has always been published in November. And what I've done is to take certain drugs, a collection, say four or five drugs, and I've looked at various states, because the Part D plans are all operate in different states. And I found that for the same drug in the same state, you can pay a difference of between maybe $20 a month to $500 a month for a 30-day supply of the same drug.
Wow.
Now, this doesn't happen always, but it does a lot, and it's happening increasingly, because with drugs, particularly drugs that are expensive, and some drugs, you know, are very, very expensive these days, the plans will charge you not a flat dollar copay like they used to, although some still do, but some plans will charge you a percentage of the cost. So, you know, if you've got a drug that costs $3,000 a month, which isn't actually terribly expensive these days compared with some of them, and when I say mm-hmm. costs, I mean that's what the plan, it costs the plan to buy from the manufacturers, and they charge you a 50% copay, you know, you're paying $1,500 a month.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, another plan which doesn't charge you 50% or 30% or 40% or what have you, but charges you, say, a $90 a month copay, you can see the difference.
Yep.
And it's huge. And I the first time I found this, I was quite amazed by it. And I thought, I can't be right. But I checked it, and I was. And so I did it every year, and I found the same thing every year.
And where is this publication that you talk about doing in November? Where can people find that?
No, I used to do it for the AARP Bulletin, but I don't work for AARP anymore. I've retired.
Okay.
And so I don't know if anyone's doing that now.
Okay.
But the one for this year was published last November.
Okay. That's too bad. I mean, you should do this personally.
Well, I mean, in the book,
people would pay for it.
And I often, when I'm writing to people, because they're asking about Part D, I always say that, you know, you should really ideally do this, because it really can make a huge amount of difference to the cost. Now, if you're only taking a few generic drugs or something, then you're not going to be in that position. But even so, I mean, for some, one of the drugs I looked at was a generic. It was generic Lipitor, in fact. So it was cholesterol, which so many millions of people take. In one particular state, there would be a variation of between zero copay to $20 copay. Well, that doesn't sound a lot in the whole scheme of things, but actually, why would you pay 20 if you can get away with zero?
Well, then, what were the premiums?
Well, then there are the premiums, of course, yes.
Yeah.
These are just the copays.
Yeah. That's what I found when I was going through all this stuff. There were some, for the medications that I take, that was a huge discrepancy between one Part D plan and another. And then I looked also at the premiums and saw, well, when you factor that in, they all kind of come out to be the same. Now, maybe I'm wrong
on some of those kind of drugs,
but it was a big difference. I mean, it wasn't a big difference.
Yeah, yeah. It really depends. I mean, not everyone's going to find this huge variation, but they don't know unless they do the math, unless they compare plans carefully according to the drugs they take. That's the point.
And I think the other question
you choose a plan, and you don't have to stay with it forever. I mean, every year you can review, you know, the plan again according to the drugs you take. Perhaps you take different ones, you know, next year to what you took this year, or more.
When is that time period that you can make the choice of the Part D?
Yeah, so it's open enrollment, it's called. And this is for people who are already in the Medicare program. And what happens is that in September, your plan is required by law to send you what is called an annual notice of change. And this letter they send, they have to tell you what's going to change for next year, for the next calendar year. It'll change as of January the 1st. Whether their premiums are going up, staying the same, going down, occasionally it happens. What the copays are doing, you know, whether they're giving extra coverage for this, that, and the other or not. And so this is what they have to say. Well, you can use that information during open enrollment to go and compare that plan with what else is available to you for next year. And it's possible that, you know, you just want to stay with the plan. I mean, it's easier. If you stay with your plan, you don't have to do anything. Your coverage just rolls around. However, always in January, I get lots of emails saying, I don't understand this. You know, I was paying so much for my drugs, a few weeks ago, and now I've gone and it's quadrupled. And I said, well, you know, you should have looked at that letter because that will have told you.
Does that letter itemize each of the drugs and tell you what the costs are?
First, if you don't do this research. And I know that it's a bore. I mean, I really do. I've done it a lot. but it pays off if you can do it.
Does that letter tell you exactly what drugs you're taking and what that increase would be?
You know, I don't know whether it does. That's a very good question. I don't know. I've only just joined Part D, so I haven't done this myself yet. They are required to give you certain information. I think what they would do is simply to, you see, how the drugs are priced for copays, the individual plans place them in their pricing tier. So it'll be, you know, tier one, tier two, tier three, tier four. And they all have different copays and or percentages of the cost. And so what they will likely do is to send what those tiers are going to be next year. And they could be very different from this year. And they will also, or should, send, you know, a list of the drugs that they cover with information on which tiers those drugs are in. So you can work out, you know, what it's going to cost you.
All right. Thanks to my guest, Patricia Barry, who is truly, as we've discovered, an expert on Medicare. And to all of you in my Power of the Purse community, I hope today's podcast was helpful in enriching your understanding of money and how it can help you achieve your goals. If you'd like to spend 15 minutes on a call with me and ask me questions about your personal finances, please go to my website, powerofthepursepodcast.com, select the Contact tab, and find a time that works for you. Thanks again, Patricia Barry, for sharing your time and knowledge, and let everybody know how they can reach you.
Yes, I have an email address that is specially so that I can personally answer questions that on Medicare that are sent to me by consumers. And that address is, I'm going to say it, but then I'll explain what it is. It's yourmqs@gmail.com. And that's short for your Medicare questions. @gmail.com. So it's yourmqs@gmail.com. yourmqs@gmail.com. And I'll try my best to answer any questions you have.
Thank you very much. And until the next time, thanks for listening. And remember, money is not the enemy. Your ignorance of it is. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.
We hope you've enjoyed your time with us on this episode of the Power of the Purse podcast. If you're ready to take action, go to lynnsevans.com/call and sign up for an exclusive one-on-one call with your host, Lynn Evans. Thanks again, and join us next time to explore more ways you can take control of your finances and your life.